and Gunashish for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Now, this is not going to be one of your typical Juno Afternoons, and try to think of this of something like a radio wake. And the man that we are remembering this afternoon, Dennis Egan, would have probably enjoyed this and peppered the conversation with a few choice words, good-naturedly, of course. But Dennis Egan was many things to many people. He was a DJ, a pioneer broadcaster, a businessman, the mayor of Juneau, a state senator, and he was also Governor Bill Egan's son, and I guess he never let his father live that down. We'll hear more about that later. But from all accounts, he was full of mischief, and that early personality trait never really went away. From a kid who grew up in the governor's mansion to being a pioneer radio broadcaster to a major player in state and local politics, he remained at heart a rare breed of politician who loved to share humor and goodwill across the aisle. And boy, we could sure use more of that today. But we do have a group of friends and colleagues assembled here today, Beth Curtula and Bill Corbis, Christopher Clark, and we hope to have Beth's husband, Jim Powell, joining us on Zoom later on in the program. But we do have Senator Jesse Keel, who is joining us from Sitka today. So I thought what we'd do is we'd start off with each one of you explaining your connection to Dennis. And so I thought that we would start off with you, Christopher Clark, since you and Dennis usually gave each other hell on a regular basis.
Oh, man, and we enjoyed every minute of it. Whenever we could take jabs at each other, we would. And if we didn't, we thought something was wrong.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I had the pleasure of working for him at KINY back in the late 90s as a reporter and working with my friend and mentor, in my mind, a legend named Pete Caron. And it was at KINY that I got to know Dennis better. I grew up here, as, of course, Dennis did. And I was always told, don't be like Dennis Egan. No, you can't go in the mine. No, you can't climb up. You can't drive up Mount Juno on a motorcycle. No, you can't trap beavers at the Douglas Dam, and more.
So, but did you do those things?
Some of them. I think Dennis wiped out the beavers before I had a shot at them. And the reason he was paid to do that because that's where Douglas used to get its water from this little dam that's near Crow Hill, and Dennis was paid to trap them because they were giving people beaver fever. So Dennis did his civic duty and trapped beaver there. But no, it was fun. Whenever I'd see Dennis, especially when I worked in the legislature, it seems like all I had to do was just try to say something fun related to whatever was there in front of us, and it would lead to a story. One day I was in his office, and he had this big, beautiful picture of the old A.J. Mill. And I says, oh, yeah, I heard you were part of the reason that burned down. And no, I wasn't. Here's what really happened. I got this great story out of him. And that, more often than not, it was just dumb luck that I got great stories out of him.
I know, and hopefully we'll get to hear a few of those today. Well, I would like to go to Jesse Keel, Senator Jesse Keel, who is in Sitka right now, but joins us through our sister station, KCAW, on Zoom. And I know that you and Chris often, as legislative aides, shared a lot of good times with Dennis Egan.
Absolutely. And Dennis was a great boss to work for. You know, I'd been a staffer for a while when he came into the legislature, and he came in sort of ready-made for the job. But here's the thing. Almost nobody, when they are interviewing politicians in that giant job interview you call a campaign, right, when they show up at your door, nobody asks, so, how are you as a personnel manager, right? That's just not a value people have when they vote. But Dennis was a really good manager. He was a good boss. So one of my favorite Dennis Egan stories is after he got the appointment, before he was elected again and again to the term by the voters, he brought each of us who worked for his predecessor and now for him into his office individually. And he said, listen, I want to offer you the job. I want to keep you on and I want you to work for me, which most people would never think of doing, but making it explicit marked that transition. And that was sort of just four decades running a business. Dennis knew to do that. And so when I said, listen, you know, I'm flattered and I'm honored. I have a couple of questions about where you stand on things. He said to me, "You darn well better." He didn't say, darn.
Yeah, we get the idea.
But Dennis was a policy guy too. And so, you know, then you could work for him, right? And working for him was much as Chris described it. A lot of fun, a lot of great stories, a lot of very serious work. And he was the kind of boss who would tell you what he wanted worked on, what he wanted worked on, and he'd set you off to do it, and he'd expect you to bring it back. If you needed to check in with him, you checked in with him. He didn't want to have to babysit you. He didn't micromanage you. He expected you to be good at your job and to come back and deliver. And he always held up his end of that, right? Boss, do you want to go this way or that way? I mean, there's a decision point here. He'd think about it. He'd give you an answer. And even if things went upside down, he knew who made the call, and he wouldn't try and pin it on you. He was just a heck of a guy to work for.
Well, so interesting, Jesse, because you took his position after he left it. You were elected to fill his slot. And, you know, so there's that connection of having been mentored under him as a legislative aide. Now, I would never say filling his shoes, but carrying on a lot of the things that Dennis started. And then, of course, we have Beth here, Beth Kurkula, who is connected to Dennis in many ways, but let's roll the clock back to how Dennis got to be a state senator, because that was a very challenging time for you, Beth, as I recall.
It was. My senator, then Kim Elton, had left to go take a position in the Obama administration, as I ultimately did. So it left us without a senator.
You were the state representative.
I was a state representative at that point. And always before, when a state representative had wanted to move up to a Senate seat, that had happened. But the process usually was that the governor was given three names. And because I had been minority leader throughout the then governor's race, ill-fated race for vice president, I was one of very few people who spoke out about it against her. And I have to admit, I didn't really want to do that too much.
Well, actually, the two of you, you and then Governor Sarah Palin, actually had a good relationship.
We did.
Collaborated.
So we did.
So she was expecting you to come out in full-throated support of her run for the vice presidency.
I think that's correct. And it is true. We did have a good working relationship in the legislature. And I think it's all just been, you know, a terrible situation to see what's happened after that. But at any rate, it was part of my duty. And my press secretary then, Frank Amaduri, made that very clear to me. So there was really no way out. So I did it. And sure enough, she wasn't really too happy with the idea of seating me in the state Senate. So all session long, what happened was the Democratic Party and the Democratic State Senate at that point would really push my name, put my name forward. It would be rejected, and then it would be put forward again, and then it would be rejected. And there were a whole lot of lists going around. There were Democrat lists. There were Republican lists. There were all this internecine lists I'm sure I don't even know of. But Dennis stayed back, and I think that was due in large part to our friendship, my husband Jim's friendship on the assembly with Dennis, but also, moreover, our parents were, I mean, my dad took then Governor Egan's race over for governor at one point. I mean, they were extremely close, and I grew up around the Egans, but particularly knew Dennis's father, Governor Egan, really well. He was a very kind, amazing human, as was his mother, but I knew Bill Neither. Better. So anyway, push came to shove, and I couldn't go anywhere. You know, it was like, go, you know, beat her. Really not. It wasn't fun. It wasn't.
No, it was
sounds
quite
fun,
a drama.
But it was not fun. It was really hard. Plus, I was also trying, with a lot of help from all the staffs, to hold down both seats. So at any given moment, I might have a vote on the floor and then get called into a Senate caucus on what needed to happen for Juneau and what was the situation. So it got to the point where it was really untenable. And I went out for a run. This is almost at the end of session. I went out for a run, and I literally slid in the middle of the road in North Douglas. And I'm lying there looking up at the stars. And I thought, you know, God, this just has to end. And so later that day, Bruce and I called Dennis.
Bruce Patella.
Right. And said, and I know other people were involved in this as well. It wasn't just us, but and said, are you ready to do this? Because I'm going to withdraw my name. And then at that point, everything just happened really fast. And thankfully, Governor Palin appointed Dennis. And it was just an amazing, amazing time getting to work with him. He was built for it. He knew the ins and outs. He knew the process. He cared deeply about people, and he was, of course, hilarious. So perfect.
You know, he had such a sense of humor that whether you were a Republican or Democrat, you would probably enjoy hanging out in his office and just passing time. And he was probably one of the few that could do that kind of thing. Do you think, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. He had that gift. Because he, as Bill will tell you, he and Beth and Jesse can tell you, he understands how important it was to get along with people. That he knew stories back in the day when Jack Coghill and Governor Bill Egan would fight like cats and dogs in public on a policy issue, but then go down to the old Gastineau apartments and play poker together.
Have a drink.
And have a drink and break bread together. And
yeah, those days are not around anymore. I wish they were. So, Bill, you pointed out to me as we were talking before the show that you are one of the few Republican friends in this kind of group of people that have a weekly Zoom call that they had to Dennis Egan right up until the week before he died. And did you find Dennis one of those people that could cross over on certain issues politically?
Yes. Yeah, I originally got to know Dennis in about 1970 when he was in the National Guard, and I was working for AELP, and they had a power outage on the weekend, and the armory was without power, and that's where the National Guard was meeting. And I went down there, and we eventually got that problem resolved, and there was Dennis with his military haircut and all clean and proper in his uniform, and he asked me to join the troops for lunch. And that was sort of the start of our friendship. And then as time went on, I got involved in the Capitol move issue, as Dennis was, and that's where I really got to know him. And I can remember spending a lot of time where the old station was by the bridge radio station, and being interviewed about the Capitol move and so on and so forth. And then from that, he went on to get into local politics, and I was very much involved in his early campaigns.
So did you like discussing issues with him?
Well, the main focus was the Capitol move, and that was not a partisan, as far as we in Juneau were concerned, was not a partisan issue. And so that's how I became acquainted with him, and there have been some issues at the state and local level that I disagreed with him, but more that I agreed with him.
So did you get called any names by him? Did you get the "oh God, go away" treatment?
Well, as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, before we go any further, I want to play some comments from Bruce Patello, who was part of this Zoom group. I guess how many people are in this Zoom group that would meet regularly with Dennis?
I think it was about five. It was Bruce, Bill, Mike, Jesse, me. Oh, yes, and did I forget one, Jesse? There were six of us?
And Mike Szymanski from up north joined us relatively late in the game.
But that was a good group of people. And so I talked with Bruce. He had a commitment. He had a friend coming in on a cruise ship. And it was the one chance to be able to get together, which is right now. So I talked with him, and I asked him, you know, can you share some memories of Dennis? And he said, well, I'm not going to share any funny stories because I think the rest of the group will do that. And he said, but I want to share about my time with him on the assembly. So let's listen to what Bruce has to say.
I would say one of his major contributions on the assembly was partnering with me to develop a port dues system, which required cruise ships visiting Juneau to contribute to the development of Juneau's port. It was a very contentious issue. It took more than a year to work through an ordinance that ultimately was adopted unanimously by the assembly, but which was opposed at every step by, at that point, representatives of the cruise ship industry. And Dennis and I traveled to Seattle to negotiate. Dennis played a particularly important role because he was identified in the community and I think in the industry as well as someone who had good business sense, had been, in fact, managing a company, brought those credentials to the table. It is the forerunner of the city's efforts, particularly in the late 90s and since, to develop the infrastructure that we all enjoy now on the waterfront. Missed the guy.
Yeah, I know, we all do. Oh, well. Did he ever say, oh, God, it's you, to you?
Oh, of course. Yeah, other expletives that one can't say on radio, but done affectionately.
Always with affection. And here I thought I was the only one that he said, oh, God. But he used to say, go away, you're trouble, because I was a reporter, yeah. Obviously. But he was always welcoming. I knew it was just a joke. But at first it was a little strange. And I think, Jesse, it was probably you that told me that if he gives me a bad time, it means he likes me.
It took a minute to train people in the Capitol who hadn't known Dennis forever and ever. That if you came into the office, he said, oh, what do you want? Not you again. That was the equivalent of hi, you know, I'll never forget his first full session. So Dennis was appointed on the last day of a legislative mm-hmm. session. So the next year, first full session, he had somehow finagled, I still don't know how he did this, to keep the finance committee seat that his predecessor had, which those are in hot demand. And he's in the hallway outside Senate Finance, and a fella from one of the industries, I should be able to say his name. So John McKinnon was, I think, with the Associated General Contractors at the time, but he had once been Deputy Commissioner of Transportation at that point. And he and Dennis had sat next to each other on the Juneau Assembly many years before, and they were good friends. But they had nicknames for each other. And so if memory serves, Dennis came up behind John, who hadn't seen him coming. And he said, hey, dummy. And without missing a beat, John turned around and said, what do you want, stupid? And everybody in the hallway backed up against the walls. They thought, oh, Lord, the legislator and the lobbyist are going to fight.
Later, they
came to realize, no, that's just what they called each other. They were friends.
Yeah, they used to sit next to each other in the assembly. John was the deputy mayor to Dennis being mayor. And I, as a reporter covering them, I could see them more often than not just talking to each other and laughing and wondering, what the devil are they talking about? It sounded more interesting than what we were listening to at the time.
Well, Beth, you kind of were in an odd situation. You know, both of you, him having to take a spot that many people thought that you deserved because of your experience. And, of course, there were frustrations with then-Governor Sarah Palin at the time. And interestingly enough, she's back in the picture of state politics. But how did things go between you and Dennis once he got in?
So I'll never forget the first meeting we had together. And, I mean, we had been friends for a long time, so I knew him, knew his family well. But during this meeting, it was with people I really didn't care for, and Dennis knew that. But I was being very polite and, you know, just listening and really not getting into an argument, being nice. So after they ended and left the room, Dennis turns to me and he goes, "You are so full of, you know what?" I just looked at him and burst out laughing because, you know, most people wouldn't. You know, first they wouldn't see it, or second they wouldn't call me on it, and he did both. So he was really great to work with because he cut through any artifice. He just went right for what was important. We would, a lot of times we'd have short conversations because we'd need to tell each other something very quickly. So, and he never called me dummy, for instance. He didn't do that to me. We had fun and we'd tease each other, but Bruce himself recently said it was more of a gender thing. So he and I got along extremely well, and along with Kathy Munoz, the three of us, we had a great team, you know. But Dennis never undercut me. He never caught me by surprise. He was never condescending. And the thing I think I really loved the most about him, sense of humor aside, because it was wonderful, was he really cared about people deeply, and he would just go to the mat for them. You know, he wouldn't stop, and we would work together on constituent issues, and, you know, it was just a joy to work with him. But, yeah, that first meeting, he really caught me off guard.
You know, I always wondered how he managed, because he had multiple sclerosis, yeah, had balance issues, and it seemed to me that really you could just not notice that. I mean, because his personality was so overpowering, and so, you know, he had you laughing in stitches most of the time, and maybe he had a talent for distraction. But Bill, can you tell us about when Dennis developed multiple sclerosis and what kind of an impact it had on him? Because he didn't let us know that he suffered.
I don't know exactly when, but I know that he was an avid boatsman, a yachter, and he had a beautiful boat, and he ultimately had to give that up because his balance was such that he didn't feel safe on a boat, and that was a great setback for him, and that was one of his prime recreational pursuits.
One of his real joys.
Yeah, yeah, that was
the Salmon Derby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was important to him, the Derby, and being on the boat. I remember being a reporter for the Golden North Salmon Derby, watching him come in with his big boat with Linda. And, of course, Linda was the one who was always, his wife, was always the one turning in the big fish, and which I love to poke at him with. But I remember when the Juno delegation went to Petersburg for the Little Norway Festival.
Oh,
it was Dennis, Beth,
so
Kathy.
So much fun.
And I got to tag along. And his super-duper aide, Alita Bus, just a wonderful aide, had to escort him off of the ferry, which astonished me. It was my first time I actually got to see it, because, as you know, when you get off a ferry, typically there's the planks, and you can see the water between the planks, yeah, as you're going, and that, yeah, was enough to mess up his sense of balance and would trigger vertigo. So I just followed Alito's lead and helped him, and that was when it really finally hit home that he had MS, because before it was almost hard to imagine that he had the condition, because there were so many other things to be distracted by or to enjoy about him.
Some days he would walk very stiffly, you know, and that would be the only sign to me that anything was going on. Yeah.
Well, Jesse, it seems like he's a person with a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not obvious, but could you share your perspectives working closely with him for so many years?
Well, sure. I mean, I was just going to note that the story Chris told about Petersburg, I think, yeah, Dennis had MS for 30 years at that point. You know, I mean, I think it was a very long-term thing he'd managed and dealt with. And Dennis definitely had a sense of personal dignity, a sense of personal pride. He did not like that anybody could see when he had a flare up or an issue with his medical condition. They happen sometimes. He never hid anything, right? When he had to take somebody's arm to get from point A to point B, or walk a different route out of the Capitol to his truck instead of the catwalk that has that metal grating in the back, He just did. But that was something that he generally would try to avoid having seen in the public. So he probably, I think, could have used a cane or something before he left the legislature, but he'd be doggone. And again, that's not the word he would have used if he'd seen that.
Well, before we take a break, though, I'm curious about these weekly Zoom conversations that you had with Dennis. What kind of things did you talk about or that you can share? Maybe some of those you can't. I don't know.
Well, we certainly spent a lot of time talking about in recent times about the replacement for Don Young. And I can't say that anything was ever concluded from those conversations, but believe me, we went through most of the front runners and great length and speculating on when we get down to the top four and how that's going to play out. And at least, I don't think we ever concluded anything, did we?
I think we got three of the four finalists, and we didn't see Mary coming, Mary Peltola. And so we had a lot of fun talking about that, you know, how Mary came seemingly out of nowhere to claim a fourth position, now third position in this contest.
A lot of hard work went into that out of nowhere.
No kidding. But it's also underscored what a political junkie he was, because that's why we met. It was anything was game when it came to politics, because he was devoted to it. I mean, he was the consummate political news junkie.
He was in a care facility, right, in the lower 48. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't able to be here. I know he wanted to be here, but he still followed Alaska politics, it sounds like it.
Well, this I was going to say that the Zoom meeting was really a sort of a follow-up that we used to meet as Bruce Botello and Clark Greening and Tom Cash and Dennis and myself for lunch. Oh, all the restaurants around here for a couple of years. It was usually a Thursday. And anyhow, then when Dennis moved south because of his health, that's when we sort of got into the Zoom mode. And in the meantime, Tom Cashin had passed away, and Clark Greening was no longer able to attend. So then we picked up a few new people and had a great time.
It's kind of strange, Jesse, when you think about having that last conversation with that person before they go. And I think you were supposed to have another meeting on Tuesday, but you weren't able to go because you were traveling like you are now. And as it turned out, he wouldn't have been alive for that meeting. But do you reflect on some of the things you talked about in that last Zoom meeting?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was a late add to those, mostly because I harassed him by text message all the time anyway, and partly because I'm too young for any group called a geezer gaggle. but I was in that last conversation the week before he went. I can't remember if I said something like I was too young or he was too old or something, but I received a well-deserved hand gesture from Dennis, the last one I got from him, and I will treasure it forever.
A well-deserved hand gesture. Well, we'll leave it at that for the moment and pick up this thread later. But before we go, I should reintroduce our guest for you. We have Bill Corbus, a longtime friend of Dennis's and a longtime Juneau businessman. Beth Curtula, who was a former state representative and served with Dennis Egan. And we also have Christopher Clark with us, who worked as an aide in the legislature. And both of them went back and forth mercilessly at one another. And we also have Senator Jesse Keel with us, who was an aide and then later took his position. And we'll be back to tell some Dennis stories. This is what I'm sure you've all been waiting for, is some good Dennis Egan stories. But I did talk to his daughter recently, and she said that before he died, one of the things he really liked was listening to music from the 50s and the 60s, and among one of his favorite groups were the Everly Brothers. So we'll play this song in honor of Dennis.
Yeah. Of course, that song is called Hey Girl. It's by the Gator Men, a Juno group that had a hit song called Hey Girl, and Dennis helped to record them. That's kind of one of the many things that Dennis did in his broadcasting career. So I have to ask all of you, what's the story behind the Gator Men and Dennis?
You've stumped that chump. I don't know that story. That's actually before my time. But he was always into the radio technology. He went to school in Oregon, as Bruce described it, like the MIT of Oregon for radio technology, one of the few times he was out of Alaska. And in fact, he would occasionally repair some musical instruments that needed a good tech to do it, including there was a Hammond B3 organ out at the Old Tides restaurant that later ended up in the hands of Bon Jovi, the rock group. But I guess a vacuum tube blew out one day, and Dennis had to go fix that. So he was had his hands in recordings. He had his hands in technology. So it was no surprise because he had such a consummate interest in audio and radio from his days in the when he was living in the governor's house and had his pirate radio station, much to the annoyance of the neighbors, broadcasting from the attic up in the governor's house and interfering with the signals with everybody else. I mean, so it doesn't surprise me he'd be involved in one way or another. After the 1971 Alaska Airlines crash here, he was that with that beautiful baritone voice. He was the narrator for a documentary that was done about the crash and what might have caused it. And apparently, it was so sensitive that it was not allowed to be aired by the National Transportation Safety Board or the FAA or whoever it was, because there was some apparently some speculation in there as to what caused it. But the point of that story was, again, Dennis being the audio tech and also with that golden voice was very much did a lot in radio.
Well, thank you, Christopher Clark, for that story. And I want to reintroduce my guest today. We have Bill Corbis, who's a longtime friend of Dennis's. We also have former Representative Beth Curtula, who served with Dennis when he was in the Senate. And we also have Senator Jesse Keel, who eventually took the seat that Dennis held. So, Jesse, what do you know about Dennis's role in broadcasting? I mean, he got a very early start in life and somewhat questionable start from what I heard.
Well, I don't know how questionable the beginnings were, but I mean, there is a reason the man is in the Alaska Broadcasters Hall of Fame. He really did some early TV, I think, with the Juno station, and then of course he broadcast as a DJ, started on the late night, had an air name. Didn't originally start as Dennis Egan. I think it was maybe Jay Roberts. I'm not positive about exactly what that on-air name was, but then, you know, eventually Dennis bought KINY and helped build that station into very much what it is today. And when he and Linda sold that to the current owners, he actually was involved in advocating for one of them to be able to own American radio licenses as non-U.S. citizens, which is almost never done. But that was necessary to make the sale happen. And so, you know, Dennis knew the system. And I mean, here was a guy who could fix any radio set you've ever heard of, and also knew the ins and outs of FCC regulations, which is a stack of books that rivals the Alaska statutes, and all that while he was a legislator. But just, you know, he founded Problem Corner, right? The Swap and Shop, and also Grin and Gripe on
Grin
on
and
midday.
Gripe. That sounds like a Dennis catchphrase. He probably came up with that.
Well, people did a lot of both when talking to Dennis on Problem Corner.
There was a gentleman that used to call in every day, and Dennis called him the Malcontent. And his name actually was John Wilcox, but every day he'd call in, and of course, some of the time Dennis was on the assembly, and so he was always, Mr. Wilcox was always complaining about something that the assembly was doing wrong, and so they go back and forth. Every day this guy called in.
Well, we are joined by Jim Powell right now, and he served with Dennis on the assembly. He's also Beth's husband. Hello, Jim. Yay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I was out in the field, and then I had trouble with the link, but thank you very much for doing this. I don't know where you are on comments about him, but I served with him, I don't know how many years, on the assembly, and he was a very gracious person, and it was when I first got on the assembly, so I was brand new, didn't know the, you know, ins and outs of anything, and that's, so he helped with that. He was very helpful. The thing is about Dennis is, and I've known this about Beth and some other children of politicians, is that they're way over, oh, now I'm a politician, how do I need to act? They're right, they go right to strategy. How do we get things done? And Dennis got things done. He was smart, he was very good about strategy, and he always had a joke. always liked to kid you, you know. It's kind of, and you wanted to hold him up, and you know, I mean, he was the son of the governor, the first governor, and you always heard good things about the governor, and so I kind of held him high, but he didn't like that. He did not like that at all. He wanted you to be equal with him and just get the stuff done. And on the local assembly, as opposed to these other, you know, higher level politicians, you could do it. You could see schools go up, and you know, and it was a wonderful experience. Probably the most wonderful experience I've ever had in my life is serving on the assembly, because you got things done in a quick time frame, relatively quick time frame, and it's accountable. You know, people are staring you right in the face. Why didn't this happen? Why didn't that happen? And Dennis was perfect for it, and I'm glad Bill brought up the Malcontent, because that was fun, and how he endured that person, and I think he enjoyed it because he knew it was coming. So it's It's pretty neat. Anyway, thanks for letting me say a few words.
Well, stay with us.
Before we get off broadcasting and Dennis's sense of humor, every now and then he was the guy pulling the prank, not the guy dealing with the malcontent. I will never forget Channel 2 News out of Anchorage TV had a reporter, a good Capitol Beat reporter named Adam Pinsker. He's since moved to the Midwest.
I remember him.
And Dennis got the green light from an old pal of his from his broadcasting days to do Adam's birthday during Adam's live TV stand-up. So the Anchorage studio, live news, had thrown to Adam, and Dennis and I walked up into the shot while he's live on TV with a birthday cake, and Dennis wished him well. Adam has this look of absolute panic in his eyes, and Dennis knew the words to say, right? I've approved this through Anchorage, or Anchorage Control, whatever it was, has said okay, right? So that Adam didn't immediately sort of shove us out of his shop, but the look on his face was just one of sheer terror until Dennis finally let him off the hook, and he took the cake and tried to finish his stand-up.
Well, Dennis also was the recipient of a prank or two. I mean, I think he probably delivered more than he received. But to any old-timer out there, the name Dux Thompson may ring a bell. He used to, back when the People's Republic of Douglas was Douglas, before we got eaten up by the evil empire, the Dux Thompson was the maintenance dude, and he drove a front loader. And one day, to pull a prank on Dennis at his home at West Juneau, we used to have this thing called snow. And like we did last winter, actually, we had snow again, like we did like days of yore. Well, he decided to be a fun prank to pull on Dennis to just pile a whole bunch of snow in front of his house, in front of the driveway, in front of the door, so that Dennis couldn't get out. Well, the joke ended up being on ducks because Dennis happened to be in Anchorage attending, I think, like a broadcast association meeting or some such thing. And the person who got stuck inside was not just Linda, his wife, but his mom, Neva, and they were not amused. So before the police could haul off Dux in handcuffs, Dux had to clean up his dirty deed and let Neva and Linda out of the house.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, one thing before we move off of the broadcasting, Jesse, is can you tell us what you've heard about Dennis running a pirate radio station in the attic of the governor's mansion?
Well, that was back, of course, when his dad was the governor, and Dennis was a broadcaster. Dennis liked to build things and make things happen, as we've all, I think, alluded to, even as Jim talked about strategizing how to get things done. But at that younger age, he set up his own broadcast rig upstairs. I think it was in his bedroom, right?
Remember, that's the thing with Dennis. Sometimes you got different versions of a story. I heard it was in the attic. But then I also have heard it was in his bedroom. So whichever version you prefer,
go with it. Could his bedroom have been in the attic?
If he's probably – his dad may have assigned him there, maybe.
Well,
at any
Jesse,
rate, the neighbors –
Go ahead and finish the story. Sorry.
As I understand it, the neighbors kept trying to figure out why their radio reception on the radio stations they normally listen to had gotten so bad all of a sudden. And when folks started looking into it, they discovered, gee, there was a competing signal, which Dennis didn't know all the FCC broadcast regs at the time, or maybe he could have set that up and not interfered. But as I understand it, as soon as it was discovered who was behind the bad radio reception all over the neighborhood, Dennis met with some family consequences, and the pirate radio station was off the air. On the other hand, I think some of that same equipment helped record the Gatorman.
Probably. Well, Dennis's pranks in the governor's house were legendary. There was the laundry chutes from the top floor down to the bottom. And
didn't he build a motorcycle?
And he had his BMW that he was very proud of. He had a little car that I forgot the name of what kind of car it was, like an Opel or something really small that got – they did donuts out at Dredge Lake one winter, and it fell into the ice, and they had to bring it back to dry out, and they put it in the basement.
That's it.
And before you know it, the fuel that had been watered down by the dip into the lake started to catch into the vent systems, and the whole house was permeated with gasoline fumes.
This is the governor's mansion?
Governor's house, and yeah, we call it a house. And his dad, who was a famous smoker, comes home, and it's like the tag of this line is, It's a good thing he didn't light up, because if we did, we might have had a mushroom cloud there in the middle of downtown Juneau. And instead, of course, his first instincts were the usually correct. You, Dennis, as the neighborhood would often hear, and he got Dennis down, and he had to clean up the mess and the rest of his
Dennis
history.
Dennis and Ennis, I remember my father saying that more than once.
Well, take for example, if you go to the governor's house, there's this big life-size portrait of Peter the Great, the Tsar, and it's still the mystery will be never solved, I presume. But the question is, who shot the eye out of Peter the Great? And actually, this is where we drag in the poor Greening kids into this, because there was another governor we had in the day called Governor Ernest Greening, and he had some grandsons named Clark, Wynne, and Brad. And they would play with Dennis. And one of them had a BB gun and took out the eye of Peter the Great. And to this day, each one blames the other, so we don't know who done it. But I know that Neva was not a happy camper. They actually had to go pay to have this thing fixed, and it was not cheap. So I think that's probably what swore the gang of four into greater secrecy because of the wrath that occurred thereafter.
Well, we're probably going to have to start winding down here, and I wanted to give everyone a chance to share some last thoughts with Dennis. And Jim Powell, since you just joined us and really haven't had a chance to share your experiences with Dennis as much as the rest of us have, why don't you lead off kind of in wrapping up our conversation?
The community, the state's going to miss him. You know, he was a great politician. He's the kind of politician, you know, when people say, you know, oh, he's a politician or something, I don't have a negative feeling about politicians because I have family members that are or were one. Dennis fits into that category of serving the public and getting things done. And also, I think there's some books that are just coming out. There was a book that just came out on how local government is the most productive government because it's not so polarized. You know, legally it isn't. You cannot run from a party. And he really didn't. He was a guy to bring people together. And boy, we need more people like that. We're going to miss him. I'll stop at that. Thanks.
Beth, you want to follow on the heels of your husband?
Yeah, I miss Dennis myself, and I think most of us in Juneau and across the state, anyone who knew him will miss him personally, and I feel really lucky to have gotten to serve with him early on. A reporter, not you, Rhonda, asked me, well, are you going to run against Dennis? And it was one of my proudest moments to say that a Curtula will never run against an Egan, and it was really... He was a wonderful person.
I guess it's wonderful to hear those kind of things, that we can be civil. And in fact, Bruce Botello ran against Dennis in a primary for
86.
For a legislative
seat. I voted for Bruce.
And they became and despite that, they became great friends. That says a lot, doesn't it? So, Bill, what are your memories? You know, some parting memories you might like to share with us.
I just sort of following up on what Beth said, that he was Juneau's super ambassador around the state. And, you know, the capital move has been a theme around here for a long time. And he really was the best face of Juneau forever. And he really went out of his way and we owe him a great deal for that effort for many years.
And he was an ambassador in other ways, too, beyond the Capitol, because he would travel to Seattle and other places to promote Juneau. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and he had that business sense, being a businessman himself. Do you think, were the two of you related?
No, we got involved originally on the Capitol move.
And that was kind of like the glue.
Yeah, well, everybody was involved.
Right.
We're all on glue over it.
Entire town.
That's where I really got to know Dennis, and then things went from there. A great relationship forever.
So, Jesse, what are your parting thoughts on Dennis?
Well, I mean, you know, so many fine observations have been made. Dennis was worked in government for the right reasons, right? He liked to solve problems. He liked to help people, and you know, it didn't have to be a world-changing, earth-shattering shift to be a worthwhile piece of legislation. Sometimes he'd say it's the little things, you know, little things matter to people. And he didn't mind helping others. In fact, he liked helping others, even other legislators. He'd let them jump onto a bill he had close to the finish line if he agreed with what they were trying to do, you know, put the bills together. And he'd work with people on that. Now, he wouldn't let you hijack his bill. I remember once somebody coming in and saying, so we have Senator Egan's bill ready to go to a floor vote, but we don't have a request for it to come to the House floor. And the answer was, well, somebody had talked to him about jumping on, hitchhiking on his bill. And he said, no, they did it anyway in the last committee. So he's never going to ask for that bill to come to the floor. And they were shocked, right? So that those policy issues came first, but people really mattered. If I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times from him. He says, you got to get along with people, right?
And he did it by saying, oh, God.
No, God, it's you. What do you want to get? So, Rhonda, maybe you could help us finish out. I know you knew Dennis really well, and you would often talk to him about his little man, which was a euphemism for something. Maybe you could explain.
No, it was Wally Hickel had a little man right. that talked to him. And I said that when Wally died, the little man jumped onto Dennis's shoulder and whispered great mischief into his ear. And I would say, how's the little man today? And he would say, well, he would be better if the little woman would talk with him. And then he pointed out that I had a little woman on my shoulder, and I didn't know that. But, you know, but I guess the little man and the little woman got along. Eventually. But that's my Dennis story, and we just carried on with that and on and on. But before we go, Christopher Clark, we know that Dennis loved music, and we want to go out with an Eagles tune. And it was one, I guess, that Dennis shared with you.
And a friend. This was from a concert in 1977. He admired good technology and good recording, especially from a live concert, especially in the 70s. So this is a song he liked, especially just for the audio quality. But before we do that, I just want to say thank you to the people who are here because, you know, Beth pointed out the historical legacy with the Curtulas and the Egans. And Bill, thanks for mentioning the fights we've had over the Capitol move, because that was to understand Dennis. Mm-hmm. Was to understand that played a key part of him, as did radio, and Jesse in regards to public service, and Jim in regards to public service at the assembly level. So I think maybe what will be the legacy of Dennis is actually just Dennis himself, the personality.
Dennis the man. Sounds good to me. Well, I want to thank Beth Curtula, Bill Corbis, Christopher Clark, Jesse Keel, and Jim Powell for joining us. Mm-hmm. And so we go out with the Eagles tune, The Best of My Love. Mm-hmm.
Every night I'm lying in bed, holding you close in my dreams.
And we want to thank everyone for joining us as we celebrated the life of Dennis Egan here on Juno Afternoon. Have a good evening. At the sea.